and welcome to the Epic Echo, presented by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center in West Virginia. This is your host, Nora Frazier.
Hello, Epic Echo listeners. Today's episode contains language that could be difficult or triggering for some listeners to hear pertaining to violence. If you need help or support, please call our helpline at 304-263-8292.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Epic Echo. I'm your host, Nora Frazier, and today I'm sitting down with another Epic staff member, Trey Goldeisen, an advocate out of our Morgan County Outreach Office. Trey is originally from Grant County, West Virginia, went to college in Shepherdstown, and fell in love with the Panhandle, as we all do. Trey first encountered Epic when interning with Epic before it changed its name and immediately wanted to work there. Almost 10 years later, Trey is employed as the DV specialist for Epic in Morgan County. Trey is also passionate about working with the LGBTQ plus community, identifying as a part of that community and wanting to make it a positive space and make positive changes for all of us. Trey is a tri-chair of a statewide group specifically focused on this topic called the Rainbow Justice League. This month is Pride Month, and we're bringing you two episodes about the LGBTQ plus community. Today's episode is going to be about the history of Pride Month and what Pride Month looks like in our community today. So I'll go ahead and let Trey introduce.
Hello, everybody. My name is Trey Goldeisen, as Nora said, and I am incredibly excited to be here. As she said, I work as the domestic violence specialist in Morgan County, and basically, my main job is to work with clients who have children and may or may not have CPS involvement to kind of help them navigate that, as well as be a go-between for them. I also identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community, so I'm incredibly thrilled, A, that it's Pride Month, and B, that I get to be here and talk about it being Pride Month. So I'm excited to be here.
Well, we are very excited to have you. I'm going to go ahead and start off today's question by asking you what your personal history with Pride is like.
So my personal history with Pride is a long, twisting road full of complications and hurdles, as I'm sure most people's relationship with Pride is. I grew up in a very small town. The entire county's population was less than 5,000, I believe. It might have grown by now, as most places are, but for the most part, it was very small. There was one high school for the entire county, and the idea of any kind of queerness was not only not considered a topic of discussion, it was considered like very taboo. So I grew up kind of thinking that that was the worst possible thing that you could be. My name rhymed with gay. So a lot of the time, even from the time when I was 3-4 years old, people would call me Gay Trey, and I would very much be like, oh, that's bad, because I can see how angry my parents are getting when people call me that. So clearly that's a really bad thing. As I grew, I obviously came to some realizations about myself. but it still was a situation where it was very much, I need to be fixed. I went through high school genuinely believing I just need to get to college because then I can discreetly find a therapist who's going to fix me, who's going to fix this thing that's wrong with me. At the time, I was a very devout Christian, and I recall praying pretty much every night, God, please take this away from me. This is wrong. Like, you say it's wrong, so clearly it has to be wrong. So I would pray every night, like, please take this from me, make me normal, make me, not sinful, all that, stuff. and obviously it never happened, because here I am.
But, thank goodness.
Yes. But it took me to a lot of really dark places, and it made me really have a lot of self-loathing and a lot of loathing for the community that now I love so much. And I still recall the day that I started to change from shame to pride. It was the moment that I saw the therapist in college. And I sat down with her and she was asking me a few questions. And she got to the questions, just you know, typical questions like, who's your family? Where are you from? That kind of stuff. And then she got to the question, are you gay? Do you identify as gay or bisexual or anything like that? And any other identity in the LGBTQ community? And I said, I don't know, because I still wasn't quite ready to say yes. And she said, well, are you attracted to men? And I said, yes. Real quiet and like shoulders slumped, head down, couldn't meet her eyes, you know. And she said, okay. And I looked up at her and I looked her in the face and I said, I want you to fix me. And she paused and I could see her kind of taking that in. And then she said, what is there to fix about you? And I couldn't answer her because I couldn't put it into words because I didn't understand it myself. And she said, there's nothing wrong with you. You are exactly who you were supposed to be. And that was the moment that it kind of shifted. And I started to be like, one person told me that I was okay to be who I was and that there was nothing wrong with me. And that was all it took for me to go, you know what? Maybe there isn't anything wrong with me. Maybe I am fine the way that I am. So I would say that that's kind of what started my journey to pride. And it kind of took off from there. So yeah.
I think a lot of people, myself included, can really resonate with that shame to pride track that you described. I know that I say this a lot. The people who listen to this podcast will know, but I think I just find connections with every person that we've had on the show. I also came from a small town. We had one high school. Being queer was definitely taboo. So we all just kind of banded together and had that same mentality of once we get to college, we're going to be okay. Once we get to college, we're going to be fine. And that's kind of what drew me towards Shepherd. The first time I toured, there were pride flags around in the community and at the churches and Shepherd's campus. And it was just really welcoming. And I felt like if I could just get there after senior year, I was going to be okay. So I definitely feel some similarities there. Two pages of the same book, I always like to say.
Absolutely. And it's so funny because that's exactly the reason I went to Shepherd as well. Not because I saw pride flags and everything like that. As you said, it's I believe, almost a 10-year age gap.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting older. I went there because I, for one, two of my absolute best friends were going there. And I was like, so I'll at least have them, even though I wasn't out to them yet either. But it was also because everyone kept saying, oh, Shepherd, that's the gay school. That's the gay school. That's the gay school. So I was like, maybe that's a safe place for me. And, you know, it ended up not being nearly as gay as advertised, but it was still a good place to go and for me to come into my own and find myself there. But yeah, I mean, there were definitely gay kids in my school, and there were a couple of gay men in our school, but like, not really fully out, I guess you would say. And maybe I think there was one or two guys who were actually fully out. And they were, of course, harassed horribly. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely, it was not a safe place to be open for any reason. And, you know, even the mindset of the town, the people that were there, it was just not a safe place to be. You know, I recall hearing people that I knew, both adults and teenagers, having basically fantasies of murdering gay people. You know, I recall being on a road trip and the people that I was with, we drove past a gay community center and they said they wanted to drop bombs on it and blow everybody up inside. So it was definitely not a safe place to be for the LGBTQ+. So yeah, one of my biggest regrets is that there was, very similar to you, there was a gay couple in our town and they ran a flower shop and they were the sweetest people that you'd ever meet. And I recall the few times that I interacted with them, I was always like, hi, you know? And I wonder if I would have been able to come to get to know myself and to be more comfortable in myself earlier if I had had the opportunity to actually be around them more and to have that safe environment to feel like it was okay to be who I was. So I think that that is definitely, it just sounds like our experiences were so similar in our towns.
Pages of the same book, I always say it.
That's true.
Well, while we're on this kind of transitional conversation topic about mm-hmm. the good, trying to find the good in Pride, I'm wondering if you'll tell us a little bit about your first Pride Festival experience and what that was like for you.
So my first Pride Festival experience was interesting. it was in DC, and it was with an ex of mine, and a couple of his friends, and we just kind of were there, and it was fun, and it was very hot. It was like miserable hot, but we were all just there, and it was just this atmosphere of like, you know, there was a drag queen on stage, like hyping up the crowd, and music was playing, and there were vendors everywhere and rainbows everywhere. And it just felt connected, you know. It was like, oh wow, so many people here have had experiences like mine, and possibly, you know, better experiences, possibly worse experiences, possibly like what, you know, there was no comparing that. It wasn't a situation where we were sitting down and being like, oh, let's compare who has more trauma, you know, who has been, you know, gay bashed more, or
the saddest of the game we played in college many a night. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like who has the saddest experience in life? It was just being there. And it was just, you know, for a little bit of time, we could just be unabashedly queer and not, you know, not have to worry about anything. Not have to worry about the outside world or the fact that like, oh, are we, you know, gonna say like something too gay or too, you know, whatever, and this person's gonna suddenly turn around and decide to kill us, or if you know, want to go with the less extreme, say something really harmful to us. It was just that experience of like, wow, you know. But I will tell you this, I think my first Pride event would have been more impactful because it wasn't as impactful as I thought it was going to be. But I think that was because the first time I had had an experience like that was the first time I had actually gone to a gay club, because it was the same feeling. It was just, you know, it was just in a different location and there wasn't as many people, obviously, but it was just going to that first club and just being in the middle of this huge group of people just dancing and, you know, flirting with each other and laughing, and I think it's like going to a gay club is like a micro version of going to a Pride event, because it's the same feeling. It's celebrating queerness and it's going and dancing, and you know, clubs before Pride happened, clubs were the safe place. You know, they were the haven for people who were LGBTQ+. So yeah, I think my first Pride experience was, it just felt like a bigger version of going to that first club, and you know, it was a fantastic experience, and I can't wait to go to my Pride event this month.
Yeah, it's always I have only been, unfortunately, obviously, last year's Pride events were all canceled, yes. Which was rightfully so. We needed to protect our community the way that we always do.
Yes.
But it was also very disheartening because only the year before in 2019, I got to go to my first Pride festivals that I had ever been to. So I got to go to Shepherdstown Pride, and then I went to Frederick was my first bigger Pride, and then I went to DC Pride that year as well. But I remember Frederick, it's at the park, and it spans both sides of the river where they have lots of community events and things. But you kind of walk through this, it's not a gate, but they have these archways on either side where you walk through, and they had a table set up. I don't even remember what they were doing at the table, raffle tickets or something probably. And you kind of walk through these gates, and the outside of Frederick was just normal, busy weekend. There's always tons of people, just looking like they were living their Saturday bliss, completely unaware of what was happening behind this gate. And then you walk in and it was just like an explosion of drag queens and rainbows and all of the identity flags, which I had seen rainbows in Shepherdstown, but as far as seeing like trans flags and bi flags and pansexual flags, that was kind of something that was a new experience. And having not had that experience with the gay clubs, it was very overwhelming in a very joyful way. It was fantastic. So,
you know, though, my favorite Pride that I went to, and I've been to a few because, you know, I am a bit older, as we've established. but not that many more, honestly, than you have. But my absolute favorite Pride was 2019 Winchester Pride.
I've heard great things about Winchester Prides.
It is so interesting because when you drive through Winchester, you wouldn't think that they would even necessarily have a Pride, just because it just seems like it's, you know, an average-sized town and it's just kind of chill and, you know, whatever. But then on their walking mall, they have Pride, and it's so funny because, you know, there, like you said, there are flags waving out of sight of every business. There's the brick like walkway and just, I mean, drag queens all over the place and queer people, you know, just reveling in their lives. And it's so funny because the drag show, I mean, I only went one year because COVID. Last year, COVID, but it was so funny because the drag show was performed in front of a Confederate statue, so it was kind of like this weird mix of things that I was, that somehow worked, and I was like, okay, cool, let's do it. and I'll say there wasn't a whole lot of backlash, you know, at a lot of the times when you have Pride events, you have, you know, the people standing outside the Pride events, like screaming and stuff. For Winchester Pride, there was one guy with a megaphone, and I think his wife, maybe some woman, was just kind of sitting next to him and just kind of like looking not super happy. And then he was just standing like yelling, and then people were just, you know, either paying him no mind or you know, engaging him, but like in a kind of teasing way. And yeah, and it was just kind of like, wow, that's all the backlash? That's great! Mm-hmm. So I would say that's definitely been my favorite Pride to go to thus far.
Yeah, I definitely can't wait. It seems like a lot are being postponed until the September, October months, around there, but I absolutely will still be, excuse me, ready to go. Pride can be year-round for all that I care.
Me, it is.
That would be fantastic.
For me, it is, but you know.
We should spread them out through the year anyway, because right. I never get to go to them all.
Oh, yes, I agree. One in each month.
Yeah, that sounds perfect to me. Okay, so I guess next we'll move into this next question that I have, which is about, we've talked a little bit about the difference in our ages and the difference in our experiences. So I am wondering if you will tell us your opinion on what you think about Pride and how it's changing. And do you think that it is still changing? Like what kind of changes have you seen in Pride throughout the festivals or even the gay clubs that you've mentioned going to? Just kind of describe how that scene has changed.
So honestly, like I said, I haven't actually been to a whole lot of Pride events, not because I didn't want to go, but because I was just not able to. I was either working and I was not making enough money to be able to take off work or to be able to afford to drive someplace that was having a Pride event, or you know, anything like that. And I haven't honestly been to a gay club in a while either, also because of COVID mostly, but you know, I think it's funny, but they say, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think there are definitely changes just based on the fact that there are, you know, more flags being flown and more, you know, identities that are being discovered by people. And, you know, it's nice to see that there are Pride events that are embracing those things, like those flags and those new identities. And those people, because, you know, it can sometimes be isolating, especially if you're in an identity that you feel like other people might not fully understand, even including those in the LGBTQ plus community. So to see Pride events evolving to accept and welcome those identities is really uplifting and wonderful. But at the same time, I think the essence of Pride is still kind of the same. You know, it's still a celebration. It's still saying, like, we're here. Like, to use a really outdated phrase, we're here, we're queer, you know, get used to it. But, you know, it's still valid because people still aren't used to it. We're still here and we're still queer. So it's still relevant to say that. I like to say, we're here, we're queer. Are you used to it yet? but yeah, I mean, I feel like, and obviously people who attend Pride like yearly and attend multiple Pride events would probably be able to talk more about how things have changed, based on, you know, their experience. But, you know, just in the very short amount of time that I've experienced it, there are definitely changes. What I'm seeing is hopefully for the better, but I'm also seeing, you know, that there's still that essence there that it's all about. Now, we could get into corporations during Pride and talk about how that has changed. But, you know, that's definitely also been a change. And yes, it's problematic because there are definitely corporations who are using that to just kind of market to people who are part of this community, who are part of my community, and that upsets me. But at the same time, I think about when we could walk through malls. I think about when I was younger and I was finally out and I walked through a mall and I saw rainbow stuff everywhere. And I think about how that made me feel seen. And I'm like, okay, is this problematic? Absolutely. Like this is correct. What you're doing is correct here. Now you have to do more things correct. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's about them not putting rainbows up and all that stuff. I think it's about them doing that and then following through with other things.
Right.
But that is definitely a change that I've seen because there are a lot more companies and organizations and corporations and groups and everything else that are promoting that stuff in a positive way now. There's still a long way to go, but there's definitely a lot more than when I was first coming out 10 right. years ago. So
yeah, I mean, my time span is much shorter, but I can say the same thing. I think it also does have to do with somewhat location, you know, where we grew up, being more rural, being more small town communities, the types of stores that I'm sure you had as well were very slim pickings as far as where to go. But even on the trips to the malls that I had been to, you know, it wasn't something that was seen. And I think that brings a really good point up about corporations. It's not that we don't want them to celebrate with us or to celebrate us, but we also need them to work for us, and to take that call to action that we've been asking for, well, I mean, pretty much as long as any of these corporations have been around to remember, we have been asking for them to step up and help us do some of this work with the power and the influence that they hold. And now they're kind of getting the influence, but they're not helping restore any of the power to the community. So I'm hoping that as our community continues to evolve and to stand up for ourselves, that these communities will will start to fight for us as well, because that would be much better than just the rainbow flags if their corporations and their staffs and their board members also represented mm-hmm. us a little bit more. So we've talked now about your personal history with mm-hmm. Pride. We've talked about how Pride is changing. So I think it's only right for us to talk about how Pride began. And I'm wondering if you will take us through a brief history of Pride. Maybe tell us when you learned the history of Pride.
So I have done a couple of trainings on this. And the funny thing is even though I've done trainings on it, I'm still learning about it. There are details and nuances and shadows that have been cast over people and events that are only just recently being brought to light. And it's very much a situation where there's probably truth to this, but it almost feels like our history of Pride has been hidden from us to try to make it more appealing to the masses. Because the fact of the matter is Pride began as a riot, and not just a riot that took place once, it took place three nights in a row.
Right.
People traveled to come to the Stonewall Inn after the first riot to be there in support, and then rioted some more. So the fact that, you know, we have to understand that, you know, one of my colleagues who is part of the Rainbow Justice League with me talked about it briefly in our last Rainbow Justice League meeting. There's that saying out there, be gay, do crime, which, you know, most people that's a joke, funny. But the fact of the matter is, being gay was a crime.
Right.
For a very long time, throughout the 20th century, it was a crime to be gay. Law enforcement would like follow people and would stake out places that were gay cruising areas. And the moment that they even suspected that two people were trying to, you know, have any kind of physical intimacy between each other, or with each other, they were arrested and they were hauled in. And then even if they weren't doing anything, their lives were ruined, because if you were outed, even if you denied it, you couldn't get a job. You couldn't have security clearance. You couldn't work with children. Like, you couldn't do anything. So your life, even if that wasn't the case, your life was ruined. And I think that is partially what led to this, like, when somebody calls you gay and you're like, no, I'm not. And there's that anxiety and there's that, you know, fear, because for a very long time, being called gay was enough to literally ruin your entire life, whether you were or not. You know, you could get arrested, you could be charged with the crime of sodomy and be in prison for 1 to 10 years. So it's like, be gay, do crime, you know, it comes from that, I think. And it also comes from the fact that to start Pride, to get our rights moving along at a faster pace, we had to riot for three straight nights. And, you know, it was a full shebang. It was throwing bricks. You know, Marsha P. Johnson is famously known as throwing that brick. And then you have a woman named Storm, who was a butch lesbian person of color, who incited the riots, because she was, you know, while the cops were raiding someone, because it was during a police raid, because everyone was inside just being queer, the way that we are at Pride festivals now, the way we are at gay clubs now, they were just doing that. They were just being queer. And the police raided and started to arrest everybody. And Storm was bashed in the head with, you know, with a baton and was bleeding. And she looked up at everyone and she said, "Why aren't you all doing anything?" And that was what set everyone off and what incited the riot to begin. A butch lesbian woman of color was the one who incited it. A trans woman of color was the one that threw the brick. And then everything went from there, you know? I mean, the next year they had the first Pride event. I don't believe it was called Pride at that time. But it was the first Pride event. It's recognized as the first Pride event in New York City. And, you know, it was all about that realization that we don't have to take this. You know, we don't have to take this anymore. There's nothing wrong with us. We are who we are. Back up, let us be, and, you know, embrace us.
Yeah, I think something else that I'll add for our listeners who may be a little more unfamiliar with this history is that when Stonewall occurred, the night of the Stonewall riot, that was not the first or the second or the third or the 10th time that the police had come and had raided and had packed all of these queer folks into their paddy wagons and hauled them off to whatever their fate may be, which was obviously different depending on their race and their gender identity. Could be very different what punishments they would get, if they would be roughed up a little and thrown out, if they would be arrested, if they, it all had just been building and snowballing. And that's something that our community had to see themselves and each other put through time and time and time again. So I think that one of the misconceptions about this riot is that it just was like a match thrown into, you know, a pile of gasoline and it just really lit. But no, this was, they had been throwing sticks on this fire for months and years. And obviously, I mean, our community wasn't welcome. That's why this riot happened in the first place. But this specific incident wasn't anything new to Stonewall or to those queer folks in New York.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, and it wasn't just raids. The raids were a big part of it, but it wasn't just raids. Like I said, law enforcement followed people. They were actively hunting anyone who might have been homosexual at that time. You know, they would send young, good-looking police officers, you know, dressed all nice, into clubs, and they would, and once somebody flirted with him, and he led them outside, and then off they went, and, you know, arrested. So it wasn't just we're raiding you. It was we are actively making the only space that you feel safe unsafe. You are no longer safe in this space that you have sought as shelter. And like you said, Nora, you know, it was a situation where it was decades. It was decades of constant harassment, constant dehumanization, constant criminalization. And it was finally just like, enough's enough. You know, we are, you know, we're not just here, we're powerful. And I think that was the misconception a lot of people had at the time, was that they could do these things to us because we couldn't fight back. And Pride was the moment that we proved that we could. Not just that we could, but that we would, and that we would support each other, because, as I said, people were traveling from outside of the area just to come and be there. And I think that was what made it so powerful, was because we showed that we weren't getting power. We had always had it. We were just finally ready to use it. And we were finally using it to show that we couldn't be treated like that anymore.
Right. I know the history of Pride is becoming slightly more talked about. You know, you can see corporations sharing photos of the Stonewall building, which still stands today. I've had the pleasure of going. I wasn't old enough to enter at the time that I was there. That was pre-COVID, and I'm still a youngster, as we know. But I did have the pleasure of getting to go, and even just being there as a queer person, you can feel, I think, still a little bit of the power that lingers there. At least me personally, I was very emotional when I was there and I was seeing it for the first time, because that was the only piece of my history that I had known. So I'm going to ask you now the same question. Have you been? Have you gotten to experience that firsthand yet?
I haven't. I have only been to New York City one time in my entire life. It is a dream of mine to go back there multiple times, but I have never been to Stonewall, and I really want to go, because I do feel like it's something, it's almost like that spiritual journey that people have to take. And I feel like that is what it would be for me. You know, it would be that spiritual journey of like, this is where Pride started. This is where, you know, obviously the fight for our rights didn't begin the night at Stonewall. Like, there were people out there that were fighting for our rights before that. But this was the night when things genuinely took a turn for the positive for us, because we did show that we deserved to be here. And it was through a riot. But no, I have not been able to go yet. It is on the bucket list.
Yeah.
Because I want to.
Next time I've got to walk through those doors. And I think that will really solidify the experience as well. But even just standing there on the street, it was very, very impactful. So I hope that you'll get to do that someday, and hopefully someday soon, as the world begins to slowly open back up.
Yes.
And welcome us back out into it. So my next question is kind of about the process of learning Pride. I know we all come to it at different times. We all have different experiences with how we learn about the history of Pride. So maybe when did you begin to learn the history of Pride in relation to you accepting yourself and your identity? And then do you think that if you had learned about it earlier, it would have changed anything?
So I think the issue with learning about our history, whenever you're LGBTQ+, is that you are having such this process of finding yourself and finding your own like personal identity and your own like comfort. And there's, you know, so many ways that you could go based on your identity. You know, you could find out that you're transgender. You could find out that you're non-binary. You could find out that you're gay or bisexual or pansexual. You could find out you're asexual. Like, there's so many different identities that you have to discover on your own personal identity, that sometimes it seems like that is what we focus on so much that we start to not pay attention to the rest of our history, which is, I think, how it has to be. Because if I had been trying to learn about Stonewall and all that stuff while at the same time struggling with my own identity, it might have crossed those paths, you know, like it might have helped me, but I don't know if I would have fully appreciated it as much as I do now. That's not to say that I don't think that I shouldn't have learned about it, because I do feel like I should have learned about it beforehand. But this is why it needs to be taught. You know what I mean? Like, there is no place to learn about, like, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, they didn't mention anything about LGBTQ+ in school. They might've mentioned it once when they talked about the AIDS crisis and say it started with us. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty much it. Stonewall is not mentioned at all in any history class. The LGBTQ+ rights movement is not mentioned anywhere. So it's like, I don't know if it would have affected me in a positive or negative way, because I didn't have the opportunity to learn. I knew nothing. I knew nothing about my community because nobody talked about it. And I was afraid to ask about it because if I did, I was afraid people would think that I was gay, which clearly I was. But like, you know, there was that fear of what if I ask about this and then people find out and then I get disowned or I get murdered or I get, you know, whatever, sent to conversion therapy. So it's this problem of how do we, like, if it's not widely taught, it's going to be difficult for our community to find this information. And I was talking to somebody recently who said, you know, I think that there's a disparity between older members of the LGBTQ plus and younger members of the LGBTQ plus. And I said, well, why is that? And they said, because the younger LGBTQ plus don't know their history. And I asked them, I said, do you think it's because they don't know their history or do you think it's because they don't understand that there's a history to learn because nobody ever talks about it, nobody ever mentions it, nobody ever tries to teach it? And we kind of had this conversation briefly of like, you know, it's true. Until probably the past 2 years, I didn't know much about Stonewall or the rest of my history or the rest of my community's history.
And I think with it's the same story as with other marginalized groups.
Absolutely.
But it the lines kind of get blurred. And I think for the younger community, I mean, I can't speak for the entire community, obviously, but in my own personal experience, it almost, I don't want to say it felt less important, but it felt like a huge undertaking to go back and dig through that history because we're still making it. We're still in this fight. We are knee deep in this fight still. I mean, we have in my lifetime, I was in high school when marriage equality was granted. Yep. So we're still doing, like, we're still creating the history. So I think that there might, you know, be a little bit of not even hesitance, because I think once the history is put in front of the community, it's welcomed and it's, yes, we want that knowledge. We want to trace our pride back. I think that it's a great experience and I recommend that everybody should absolutely take that journey. But I do think that sometimes those lines just get blurred because we're still out here living it. Our history is being created every single day and with every single positive and negative law and bill that's being passed in all of the states and nationally.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's a fight that probably won't end anytime soon, you know, and it's a fight that, you know, there is intersectionality, you know, the fights for, you know, the fights for LGBTQ plus rights, you know, transfer into, you know, fight for women's rights, because we have a lot of women, both transgender and cisgender women in the LGBTQ plus. The fight for people of color, for the BIPOC community, because we have a lot of people who are part of the BIPOC community who are also part of the LGBTQ plus community. And I think that that is one of the things that I think is so incredible about the LGBTQ plus community, because you can be LGBTQ plus and part of any other community in the world. Like, you can be part of any other culture, community, anything, race, religion, you know, socioeconomic status, like every single possible other culture or, you know, group that you could be part of, you can be part of in the LGBTQ plus, because we have them all.
And our history represents it, as we've absolutely been talking about today already.
So that is why I'm like, I constantly believe, and why we've started talking about in the RJL, how do we add, you know, anti-racist work into our work in the RJL, because there are BIPOC community members in the LGBTQ plus community. So I would love to see someday, this is my dream for the LGBTQ plus community. Are you ready for it? Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. I want the LGBTQ plus community to not only have our own, like, work for our own rights, but to be that bridge into the fight for every other person's rights, because every other minority group's rights, every other marginalized community's rights, because odds are every other marginalized group is going to have members who's part of this community. And to be able to have that bridge to fight for all of us, because all of us have different needs for those, for that fight, but we can all fight together. And I think that, that's my dream for the LGBTQS community, to bridge that gap and to find that true intersectionality, because we have the ability to do it. We just have to get on the same page.
Yeah, and I think that it's very evident that those intersectional members of our community have been fighting for us, as well as having to fight for their other cultural or communities. They've already been putting in the work for us, and I absolutely think that a greater effort for our community to do the same,
yes,
would be 100%. Fantastic, would be groundbreaking and incredibly life-changing. And there are organizations and communities that are out there already doing this work. Mm-hmm. I think that we just are, you know, in this really great transitional stage right now of having to figure out how that looks for mm-hmm. us, and how that kind of fits in. We're all still fighting for our rights to do the same things that we've been fighting for our rights since 1969. But yeah, I think that it would be great to see a more communal effort.
Sorry. That's every time I hear the year 1969, that's what I think of. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Okay, never mind. Some people will know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Okay, so as we get ready to wrap up this episode, I am going to ask you the very difficult question that I ask every guest that I have on the podcast here. Okay. It's a tough one to answer. But I am wondering if you can give us a little bit of insight to, in your own opinion, in your own words, what can we do, both as members of the community and as allies to the community, to make Pride and to make every aspect of Pride and our identities work better for us, to, you know, to kind of continue the work. We kind of got into it a little bit just now, but what are some steps that we can take in our community here at home and in our community as the LGBTQ plus community to just kind of do better, to be better? We're already pretty great, if I say so myself, but how can we take it that step further?
Oh, yeah, you're right. That is the tough one. And it's funny because I've listened to all of your other episodes and I know it's coming and it's still tough.
Yep.
I think just listening to each other, like, I think, you know, the biggest part is that the biggest, I don't want to say issue, but the biggest barrier for the LGBTQ plus community is that there are so many identities within, and sometimes there can be confusion or misunderstanding amongst different identities. So just listening to each other and understanding that if we're not causing harm, like if you know, if somebody identifies as non-binary, they're not hurting anybody. You know, that's their identity. They're allowed to identify how they identify. That they're allowed to find themselves in that way, just like every other member of our community has. So just listening to each other and realizing that if a person's not causing harm to the community, then there's nothing to fight about. There's nothing to argue about. There's nothing to dismiss. So really, I think the best thing for us to do within our community is to just listen to each other and find that understanding and find that place of, you know, we're all part of the same community. We all are looking for the same rights, well, similar rights, but pretty much the same. So yeah, just, you know, stop fighting with each other. Yeah. Stop fighting each other and start fighting, you know, the people that are trying to take all of our rights from us, you know?
I'm also going to pull something just from something that you had mentioned earlier that really resonated with me, and that's that we are already seeing more flags and identities represented and embraced, and it kind of sounds like you just touched up on that point again. We just have to continue to do that work of representing and embracing all these identities, because mm-hmm. our community isn't just LGBT. There is LGBTQ plus.
There is a plus there, for and a the lot plus of stands for a lot of different things.
Right.
And here's the thing, more identities isn't going to hurt anybody. It's not going to suddenly make someone go, oh, there's too many identities, so, you know, I guess your rights have to be gone.
Close the doors. It got too big in here. We're just going to shut it up.
The fact of the matter is when back in the day, we were called homophiles. And that was all of us. We're all grouped together as homophile. And then we were all grouped together as gay. And then that slowly evolved into more letters. So the fact is, we have had our rights attacked and have had our everything attacked, our physical bodies attacked, we've had our mental health attacked, we've had our rights attacked, we've had our humanity attacked since we had a word. So adding new identities, because new identities are being discovered, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to suddenly make them go, oh, you know what? This made me want to take your rights, because people already want to do that.
Right.
So more identities is just going to make more people feel seen and included.
Yeah. And I would even say the identities themselves probably aren't that new. It's kind of not a new concept for an identity to just not have a name. We, as an entire community, have struggled with finding a name to place on our identities, I think, in just about every way. So I think that just because we're finding new words and new terminology and new flags, and even a new pride flag in general, I think that we just evolve a lot more quickly than maybe some other communities and some other marginalized groups. But that's not to say that the community itself is evolving or that those others aren't. It's just that we are finding new labels and new terms and definitions to place on our identities.
Yes. And I should have clarified what I meant when I was saying identities.
I understood. I wanted to clarify.
Thank you for clarifying that. Absolutely. Yes. I understand 100% that the identities that we are seeing now are not new in the fact of people who are experiencing that. As you said, the terminology is new.
Right.
The discovering what to say, this is my identity, is new. So yes, thank you for clarifying that, Nora.
Absolutely. And before we go, I want to give you an opportunity to tell us about some of Morgan County, where you continue to work in your office with EPIC. Tell us about some of the Pride events that you know about that are happening.
So as of right now, the only Pride event that I am aware of that I am going to be tabling at is June 26th, 11 to 4, in Morgan County at the park. In Berkeley Springs at the park, I should say, there is going to be a Pride picnic. So it's going to be outside. People are going to be enjoying it. There's just bring your food, you know, have nice little blankets and baskets and, you know, hope that Yogi doesn't show up. Sorry, that was a really bad joke that is potentially for, anyway. Apologies for everyone listening.
All right. Well, you heard it right here. June 26th, 11 to 4. Make sure you go to the Berkeley Springs Park Pride Celebration. It sounds like it's going to be really, really great. And Trey, thank you so much for sitting down with me today and for telling us about your personal history with Pride and giving us a little bit of a Pride history lesson.
Thank you for having me. Anytime. Yeah. I'd love to come back.
Oh, I'm sure that I will be able to find something to bring you back to talk about. We both love the talk. So thank you so much.
Had
a great time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Epic Echo. To suggest topic ideas or future guests, you can go to our website at epicwv.org.